إذن أسرات المستقيم سرات الذين أنعمت عليهم غير المغضوب عليهم ولا الضالين آمين. So today I have a theme, and the question is, where is your focus? So I'm going to read a little bit from the Quran, the gift by Hafez, some Shah story, and Allah's name, and then we can talk about this, okay? So this is from Sheikh Tanner's Quran translation. Allah presents a parable to you. On the one hand, there is a powerless slave who has no control over anything. On the other hand, there is one on whom we have bestowed a goodly provision from us, and they share secretly and openly from it. Are they equal? All gratitude and praise belong to Allah, but most of them do not know. Allah presents another parable. There are two men. One is mute and has no control over anything. He is only a burden to his master. And wherever he sends him to run an errand, he brings no good. Now, is he equal to the one who commands with justice and follows the confirmed and sure path? Surely to Allah belongs the hidden realm of the universes and the earth. And the matter of the hour is just as close as the blink of an eye, or even closer yet. Most certainly, Allah is able to do all things. Allah brought you from the wombs of your mother, not knowing a thing, and gives you hearing and seeing and spiritual hearts, or perception centers, to give you the opportunity to be thankful. Do they not see the birds suspended in midair? No one holds them up except Allah. Truly, here are also signs for a believing community. Allah has given you restful abode in your houses, and from the hides of cattle, tents for houses, which you find light and easy to carry on the day of departure and on the day of pitching camp. And from the wood, fur and hair are furnishings and articles of convenience, a comfort for a while. And Allah has made for you from what he has created shelter from the sun, and made for you places of refuge in the mountains, and he has given you garments to protect you from the heat, and also coats of armor to shield you in battle. Thus he has completed his favors on you to give you the opportunity to accept his terms. So this is from the Quran. Now, short story. The Khan John Fishan Khan was at one time frequently preached against by a certain Mullah of Kandahar. He called for reports of the Mullah's sermons and studied them, but he said nothing publicly. And several months after this incident, a traveler arriving from Mazar, one Abdul Qadir Beg, who wrote about it in his memoir, said, quote, "You were until quite recently preached against by the Sifri Mullah, and now I am told he never refers to you at all. Have you changed your ways? Or is this magic? What alchemy, what talisman can you have used?" And John Fishan Khan said, "If you promise to tell nobody until the Mullah is no more, I shall confide in you. I studied his speeches and saw that he contradicted himself. For instance, he objected to my administrative activities on the grounds that I was called a mystic, and my Sufi activities on the grounds that I was called a Khan. So the remedy was simple. I arranged anonymously through a merchant friend at the city of the Cloak of the Prophet that the Mullah be appointed advisor to the merchants of Kandahar. Now he has a real occupation. He no longer has to busy himself with making a noise to attract attention. So, kind of like that one, taking care of a problem. Now from Hafez, called Removing the Shoe from the Temple. There's something that connects all these, and just see if you can put it together here. Once someone asked me, why do saints seek divine annihilation and are often humble and like to spend their free time upon their knees? I replied, it is a simple matter of etiquette. And they said, what do you mean, Hafez? Well, I continued, when one goes into a mosque or temple, is it not common to remove what covers your feet? So too does it happen with this whole mind and body. This is something like a shoe's sole when one begins to realize upon whom you are really standing. One begins to remove the shoe from the temple. Did that land, or do I need to read that again?
Can you read that again?
Yes, of course. Once someone asked me, why do saints seek divine annihilation, are often humble, and like to spend their free time upon their knees? I replied, it's a simple matter of etiquette. And they said, what do you mean, Hafez? Well, I continued, when one goes into a mosque or temple, is it not common to remove what covers your feet? So too does it happen with this whole mind and body. This is something like a shoe sole. So when one begins to realize upon whom you are really standing, one begins to remove the shoe from the temple. And one of Allah's names, Al-Wajid, Allah finds and obtains whatever he wishes, whenever he wishes. Allah is able to find any of his creatures instantly, especially when he wishes to exercise his will upon it. It is even superfluous to use the word find, because all creation is in his presence at all times. Nothing can hide or retreat to a place that is out of his reach. Allah has all he needs to exercise his will. The servant must never consider herself separated from her Lord. Her Lord is ever present within and without her, and the servant is ever in the presence of her Lord. When the servant has a need, it suffices him to feel and say, O Lord, I am in your presence, and my state and my needs are better known to you than to myself. One is always in need. There is always trouble for which one seeks relief. At times we feel the need of other people like ourselves, a doctor, lawyer, judge, accountant. It's not possible to seek an audience with these people at any time of the day or night. Such ceremony and difficulty one must go through to present one's case to them. Yet how often we submit ourselves to go through all that complication while the Lord of all these servants, the curer, the just judge, the rich sustainer, the merciful, the best of masters, the loving one, the all-powerful, the ever-present invites us into his presence five times a day at the appointed prayer times, and we neglect to go to him to present our needs. Not only five times a day, but wherever you are, at whatever time of the day or night, He is there to satisfy your needs with all his love and compassion and wisdom and treasure. All you need to say is, Ya Allah. Why is focus important? What is your focus? And what do you think all of this is about? I open it to you.
Focus is important because it helps us to keep us, or reminds us of why we're here, to get to know Allah and to know him more intimately. So if we have focus, it's, yeah, that continual reminder of our choices and where our focus or awareness needs to be at, to the best of our abilities at a specific or that particular time.
Good. All right. So focus is a reminder. Is that what you're saying?
Mm-hmm.
It's a way to remind ourselves what's important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
By focusing, one doesn't stray.
So it's like lighting the path, as it were.
Correct, yes. Because that's where the nafs start to get all, you know, it starts to stray. So instead of focusing, you come into multiple thoughts.
Yes.
And then I think it's important to just bring oneself back, if one can remember, of course.
So how do you bring yourself back?
Well, I tend to go into what I call my, I always call myself the queen of daydreaming. So that's my strain, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
And then when I start to get into a particular state of, oh, whether it's, oh, poor me, or, you know, whatever, then I just start to bring myself back and I just go, Ya Allah, you know, or just go into gratitude instead of complaining, you know, because there is so much to be grateful for.
Excellent.
Well, yeah, talking to you, that I'm very grateful for that.
Well, thank you. It's always a pleasure. Gratitude's a great way to come back. That's a good idea. So focusing is a reminder that keeps us on the path, keeps the light on, as it were. And when you get lost in daydreams, a little bit of gratitude goes a long way to bring you back. There's nothing wrong with daydreaming. I think it's a useful technique and tool to help work out problems.
So on that, Shay, I think the interesting part of my journey has been that what you have to focus on, okay, so you're always trying to focus on Allah, right? But Allah in manifestation can be anything. From an objective point of view, right? Allah can be a mountain. Allah can be a person. Allah can be a book. Allah can be a podcast. I mean, you know, Allah can be a cloud. So how do you decide what aspect of Allah should have your focus at this point in time? And my experience is that changes, because it's about what you need. And as you say, Allah always puts right in front of your face the thing that you need to focus on. So it's like sometimes I stand there and go, oh, but what do I focus on? It's like, well, there's dirty dishes there. That's a good start.
You like, see those clothes on the floor?
Don't you have to go to work soon? It's like, you know, and it's like, well, it's not that hard to find what your focus should be, because it's right in front of you usually. But we don't want to see it, because it is usually what is also challenging or difficult for us, because it's our path of growth. so to like, there's really just this one choice in a way of, are you going to do what's in front of you, or are you going to choose the nafs?
I hear another aspect in there that can interfere. Mm. What I hear you saying is you're also talking about expectations, that you are expecting Allah to express him, herself in a way that is close to the Ten Commandments or something.
Yeah, or even like you might expect to hear Allah in music, but Allah comes to you through an ad for car parts. I mean, it's not... like Allah doesn't, like it says in the Quran, you know, doesn't, was it condescend or deign, doesn't, you know, object to taking the similitude of anything. But you got to be awake, because then if you're not, you only see yourself, you don't see, like you can see that same ad or whatever it is that Allah is trying to talk through, person, situation, and only see yourself. And then, and I think the indication of that is you're getting angry, you're getting frustrated, you're feeling like a victim, you're upset with people, you're feeling shame and or like hard on yourself, or then you're seeing yourself. But when you can be in that exact same situation but see Allah, your focus is on the Allah of that situation,
right? Very good. And that's kind of, it takes effort to keep that focus. And it also takes effort to realize and wake up to the fact that you lost your focus, and to not berate yourself or victimize yourself in coming back. I think that's important.
Like you always say as well, the getting lost and coming back must be part of the point, because otherwise we would have been made without the ability to get lost.
That's right.
We latch on to things thinking, oh, that's Allah. And then, you know, the next day it's not anymore, but we're still latching onto it because that's what we think Allah looks like. But Allah has moved on.
That's very true. And this requires a certain kind of listening that very, very few people know how to do. It's called listening to your heart. And listening to your heart means you have to be quiet. If you're lost in the chatter of the nafs and the mind of getting things done, you're going to lose the fact that your heart's trying to get through. And it could be, it's not going to be making, you know, stentorian announcements. It's going to say, I think the blue pants today, what do you think? And you're going, what? Shut up. I'm going to wear my jeans. And it's kind of like, yeah, okay. And that was it. That was the heart speaking to you and you deciding that you were in charge, which is perfectly fine. And it's not going to fight with you. That's not what it's about. Now, the other thing I want to bring up is Rumi calls what you've described as the open secret. Nobody's trying to hide the fact that Allah is behind everything, manifesting in every way, and trying to give you what you need. We get in the way of that and decide that we close the door, basically. And as we've talked about before, the idea of being a human being or coming into Insani Kamil, the integrated human being, all it means is you're in a cell and you are in prison. And nobody has locked the door. All it takes is just to open the door and leave the prison. The prison, one way to look at it is all the programming that your culture and your family has imposed upon you, or have attached the strings that make you like a puppet. Your job is to cut the strings. and see things for what they really are, which we call Hakika. Other comments?
So, Sheikh, just a question, just coming back to the example, the example you gave on the heart, and the heart telling you to wear blue pants, or would you say the heart is trying to come through all the time? This is where I find it sometimes. If it's coming through all the time, and if we try to listen to the heart all the time, then there's going to be no thinking involved. When do we think? When do we?
Okay, let's look at what do I call this? Evolution. Evolutionary. Our brains are to help us survive. They're fantastic algorithms, hundreds of thousands of algorithms of predicting of what's going to happen. And we use those algorithms to help us get through the day, to drive our car, to walk down the street, to have conversations, to know that it's a good day to shave, or, you know, to work socially and to work in the world. So that's our brain. It's our onboard computer. It allows us to get things done and not get killed. Our spiritual self is what connects us to life itself. It's the reality. The monkey suit allows us to make it through the day and be able to go to sleep at night and not do stupid stuff. It also has the ability to learn and understand that because we do have this ability to learn, very often learning requires failure and mistakes. Learning how to learn is a big part of our journey. We each learn in a different way. We each have different intelligences. We each have different strengths and weaknesses. Learning about ourselves in this way allows us to learn how to navigate the world a little better every day if we're focused on that, of trying to be connected with the law. The more that we're connected with the law, the more I believe we are in synchronous connection with Allah through our heart and through the outer world. So inner and outer begin to be balanced. So the thinking and the preparation and doing stuff to me is like, that's the outer world. That needs to be taken care of just as much as the inner world or the spiritual world. You can't discount either of them because this is how we're made. In one way to look at this is, this life is a paradox. And I tend to talk about it in terms of the spiritual and the material. And like we've talked about before, our peer Abdul Qadir al-Jilani says you need two wings to fly. Those two wings are the inner and the outer, Zahir and Batin. And learning how to keep that balance is a dynamic event every moment. Do I need to rely on my thinking here to calculate, you know, the stopping distance of my car? I need to brake. A car just stopped in front of me. Do I apply the brakes hard or soft? Well, you don't count on your heart for that. You count on your brain because it's learned how to do that. That's its job.
Sheikh, it reminds me of that. It's not about heart and brain, but that quote you always used to say about, is it Frank Sinatra? With the doobie 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 doo.
Mm-hmm.
John Paul Sartre says be, and who says do? I can't remember, Nietzsche or something?
Probably Nietzsche.
And then Frank Sinatra says doobie 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 doo. Like heart and the brain thing, in my experience, it's a bit of a dance almost. It's like it starts off, you're like, I'm going to use my brain now. And you're like, I'm going to listen to my heart. And then you're like, whoa, I should have probably not walked in front of that car. and they're very extreme at the beginning, or they can be. But then over time, it's like, you know, you kind of swing back and forth and you oscillate a bit more quickly between them maybe, or you learn how to weave them together because they both inform each other a little bit. Like, and for me, when you talked about Arkel, that's what really brought it all together for me, because it stopped being me thinking that I'm my brain or I am my heart. It's like, no, you have the Arkel, you can make these discernments. That's the choosing part. That's kind of almost you, you know, that's a bit getting a bit metaphysical, but you're choosing with the Arkel. The brain has information, the heart has information, but neither of them really make choices for you. You have to take responsibility for making your own choices and acknowledge that you're making choices and that you're not the victim. You're making choices. There's things you can't control, but there are things that you can, and that's up to you. But it's like you get the data from these different sources. You get brain data, you get heart data, and then you have to make a call in the moment. But you're doing it. You can't get to that by thinking about it. You can only practice making choices, and then you get better at making choices because that's the skill that you're practicing. Does that make sense?
Yes. I have two responses to that. To the first one, this isn't about comparative religion or belief systems, but there is in Tibetan Buddhist practice a thing called the mudra, where one hand is holding a dorje and the other's hand has a bell. The bell represents compassion, and the dorje, which is a lightning bolt, represents wisdom. And what they do is they're doing a Buddhist sutra or chant, and they're dancing with these two like this. And to me, that's the dance of the heart and the mind or the brain. The heart is part of the mind when you think of the whole system. This is the mind, the whole thing. The other part is, I once had a long meditation on the let's call it the Star Trek way of navigating the universe. And that is, you have the captain, okay? You have Jim Kirk, he's the captain. On one side is Spock giving you specific scientific data. You have Bones giving you specific information about compassion and about needing to take care of being a human being. And these two are coming at you with different data and information. You're the captain. You have to make a split second decision or the whole ship's going to go down in flames. So that trinity, if you will, of the one making the decisions, the Arkel and the heart and the mind or brain working on trying to balance these things out.
There's a really good comic called The Heart and the Brain. I don't know if you've ever seen it.
No.
Really funny. Not exactly the way we talk about the heart, but it's interesting. Might send you a... That's right, Awkward Yeti. It's good.
Okay.
Put it in the chat.
Okay. All right, I'll take a look at it. In a little while. Okay, other comments? This is good. You're doing really well. Exploring focus. Where is your focus and why is focus important? So far we've got focus as a reminder that we are in Allah's presence all the time, which doesn't mean that we're not going to daydream or do rehearsals or imagine things. And then to bring ourselves back, sometimes we use gratitude to bring us back. And to not get too caught up in being a victim of getting off track, but to just gently bring ourselves back. And that this is kind of like a dance between the heart and the brain, or the Spock and Bones. Which is why I think actually the series worked so well, is because it reflected the metaphor of life. Okay, other thoughts? Rukaya.
When we were talking about focus, I'm also thinking of the word concentration. Maybe it's the same, synonymous, maybe different. But I'm thinking it's very important, because even in a worldly sense, nothing can be achieved without concentration or focus, whether it's at work or study or anything. So why should spiritual life be any different? It's without focus, without concentration. How can we do anything? How can we be with Allah, or how can we work on ourselves or achieve anything?
Good. The result of that is that you learn that whatever you focus on is what you become. And what shapes the world around you is where your focus is. If your focus is on drama and interpersonal script playing, you're going to be within that kind of context. If it's about gathering material goods, that's just how you're going to see the world. In other words, your focus is limited. You can't focus on everything. You can only focus on basically one or two things. Within that focus, if you're focusing on that which is in the world of change and transformation, anything in the world is always going to be in a transformative state. It's always going to change. So if your focus is on cars or houses or jobs, all that's always going to change. There is no permanence to any of that. So to me, the smart thing to do is, why not focus on that which is not involved in change, but it's more permanent or steady? And that would be Allah and any manifestation of Allah, which is permanent. It's kind of like the difference between the wheel and the hub and the inside of the hub, the part that very rarely turns, whereas the hub's always going around and around all the time. In Buddhism, that's called samsara. It's the world of change. The inside, the hole of the donut, there's no change, or the hole of the wheel. So that's what why I'm talking about focus, is because where you put your focus is what you become and what becomes around you. This is, to me, a truth. I've seen it happen all the time. Whatever you're looking for is what you will find. I mean, our peer Jesus said exactly that. What you will find what you seek. Same thing. It's exactly the same idea. What you're looking for, you will find it. So be careful what you're looking for.
I have a question that kind of ties into, I think, what Ali was asking.
Mm-hmm.
Is, let's say that I want to work on a project that's, you know, very ambitious. It's going to require a lot of commitment. And you know, requires a lot of, might require a lot of thought, like, you know, especially, you know, you happen to do something that is like thinking is part of the job, right? Well, a lot of most jobs are, right? Yeah. So how, I guess, how can we bring Allah in that case, in order to like focus, if we're having to spend a lot of time in our head, it seems like the kind of, you know, that's not time that we're spending focusing on our heart. And that, you know, might require, you know, spending nights and weekends working this project, which may take a very long time. And it could be something that's a commitment that could take maybe years to materialize.
Gee, I have no idea what you're talking about. All my all my projects have taken more than 10 years, whether it was the first musical I wrote, or the symphony, or the orchestral works, or the screenplays. All of them have been longer than 10 years.
That take long-term focus.
Yeah, and what this is it isn't about the thing itself, but what you're willing to go through and the changes that will happen because of that. This is a form of alchemy. Alchemy is not burning something in a test tube or in a pot or anything. It's what happens over time.
It looks like so much fun.
Sorry. It does, but it isn't about that. It's about you. It's what happens inside you. You are being changed. Why? What is being changed? Everything. And that it almost doesn't matter what it is. Because when you commit yourself to something that's bigger than you, it changes you. And depending on the project, in good ways or not good ways. If it's good, your heart's happy to do it most of the time. There's things that are hard, that get difficult, but that's how you learn about yourself and who you are, through difficulties, through friction, through burning. That's one of those alchemy things.
Can I share a quote, Shake?
Yeah.
I once heard, I can't remember where I saw it the first time, but I love it, this saying, if you don't sacrifice for what you want will become the sacrifice.
Whoa.
Good one, isn't it? I can't take credit for it. I just can't remember where it's from. But it makes a lot of sense in a lot of contexts, and it makes you think of, well, what are my priorities? What do I really want to achieve? And is what I'm doing right now helping with that?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think perhaps for me, one of the basic questions I ask myself, will this help bring about a better world in some way? Does this make things better? And if I can answer that and say definitely yes, then I'll commit to it if I feel like my heart is happy and pleased to do it and the energy's there.
Jay, can I just ask a question going back to what you're saying about focus?
Yeah.
And you were talking about, you know, where is our focus, where our focus needs to be as compared to focus being on the world and things of change, which I, agree and understand. So, you know, part of my journey has been, you know, there's responsibilities with whether work and family and other commitments, and then there's the time to being with Allah. So time being with Allah is focus, and then you're with, you know, other elements of your life. And my question is that the world is changing, and so the understanding is that, yeah, it's not real, you know. So what is real? Things that don't change. So what if our focus it needs to be on things of impermanence, such as things of the world, but yet we still have the understanding that Allah's behind that. Is that the same thing? Sort of, does that make sense, or do I need to explain a bit clearly?
Can you put that into a sentence? A question.
Well, if our focus sometimes is not where it should be, for example, things of the world of change, but while we're focusing on other things, if we're aware at that time that the things that we're focusing are changing, but are not real, but Allah's behind that through His manifestations, isn't that still a form of focus?
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. And like I said, it's like living in a paradox, and being able to hold that is difficult. Mm. But as we've talked about, if you want to be Allah's servant and you want to be a good wali or khalifa, and you want to be connected with Allah, surrender is the key here. And surrender means, okay, this is what's happening in this moment now.
Right.
Now, it doesn't mean that you get all of the understanding of it. You may be only getting a certain part of it because we're learning. Mm. All of this is a part of the learning process. And sometimes we get some of it. Sometimes we get a little bit more. Sometimes we get less. And the idea of, like, every day, that's part of the practice of going, you know, am I learning what I need? Am I learning what I need to be learning here?
Mm.
And that's always a great question.
Mm.
What a good question it is, because then you're going, okay, am I getting this right? If not, Allah, please help me here, because I'm at a loss. Why is this happening? Why are people pouring water on me, or why is there rain, or what? Why are these people yelling at me? What have I done? Mm-hmm. You know. Then you go back and retrace and figure out what's going on. So, these are on all these different kinds of levels, and our idea, the practice is, if I can get enough of this one out of the way, maybe I can see a little more clearly what the point is here.
More specifically, if it helps, is like if someone was, for instance, focused on building model airplanes, and it's too focused on that, one could say, oh, you're not being focused on Allah. But through the art of building model aeroplanes, if you can see, you know, for the designer of Allah's attributes are Musawir and other aspects coming in, then your focus becomes a bit more pure.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And like we were saying before, very often, by focusing on one thing, it can open up and become a way to understand Allah, or at least an aspect of Allah that you weren't aware of before, if your focus is on Allah. If Allah doesn't concern you, then you're just going to be learning about some physics. But if you go, okay, I'm trying to understand about Allah through model airplanes, and I've affixed a ramjet to the top of this balsa flyer. Let's see what that does. And the thing, you put it out there, the ramjet turns on, and it burns the whole thing up, and you go, wow, okay, that's cool. I shouldn't do that again, but I learned something from that.
The other thing, if I could just add one more thing with focus, is I found that, and this may just be for me, I don't know if it works for other people, but when I was younger, I used to be like, oh, I don't do that anymore. I do this now. And I almost lamented that I didn't do that other thing because I was now focused on this. But as I get older, I've noticed that things just come around in cycles. And like, you know, I spent a bit of time doing some programming when I was younger, the computer programming. I was like, yeah, I let it go for a long time. And I was doing a lot more education. And then this year, it's like suddenly I'm writing an app for educational purposes, and it's come back. And you never know, I think, in Allah's sort of plan of the story, where things are going to meet, separate, diverge, combine, mix up. Like, we're so small in our focus, like in our understanding. You know, you might get this obsession with model airplanes, and then in 5 years' time, you might find out that that's exactly what you need to do something for Allah. And you don't know what it's like, why you're doing it at the time, but it comes out later on. Oh, I needed to teach this kid about model airplanes, and that's how I connect with this troubled kid, or, you know, whatever. Like, it's something, you know, like something will come through, and it's like music almost. Like, it the sort of the patterns repeat and mix.
Yeah, and what somebody said is, you don't know your story because it isn't over yet.
Exactly.
So, but what you describe is mostly my life. All the stuff that I did, which it seems so off the wall and so rebellious and weird, and I didn't understand myself what I was doing or why I was doing it until now, when all this weird stuff that I did comes into play in trying to explain weird stuff.
You're just ahead of the curve, Shay.
Yeah.
I have an observation.
Okay.
About focus. Well, that perhaps there's a like minimum threshold of focus for me as a human being to be able to accomplish anything. And I kind of like work backwards in this, because I was thinking about it, and I was like, oh, it's like trying to boil water with a candle, right? And I was wondering if I could read a short Nasruddin story.
Sure.
Well, the title is Cooking by Candle, and this is in the Idris Shah, The Exploits of the Incomparable Mullah Nasruddin. Nasruddin made a wager that he could spend a night on a nearby mountain and survive in spite of ice and snow. Several wags in the tea house agreed to adjudicate. Nasruddin took a book and a candle and sat through the coldest night he had ever known. In the morning, half dead, he claimed his money. "Did you have nothing at all to keep you warm?" asked the villagers. "Nothing." "Not even a candle?" "Yes, I had a candle." "Then the bet is off." Nasruddin did not argue. Some months later, he invited the same people to feast at his house. They sat down in his reception room, waiting for food. Hours passed. They started to mutter about food. "Let's go and see how this is getting on," said Nasruddin. Everyone trooped into the kitchen. They found an enormous pot of water, under which a candle was burning. The water was not even tepid. "It's not ready yet," said the mullah. "I don't know why. It's been there since yesterday."
Yes. So how do you understand that?
You know, this might have been the first time that, wondering if I'd read that story and had the same reaction before, but I definitely, you know, that was the story that I thought of we're talking about this, like the sufficient level of focus. My understanding of this is like putting in 1%, I'm not going to get 1% out. Putting in 10%, I'm probably not going to get 10% out. I mean, you need to commit more, up to who knows what level, but before I see any sort of result.
Yes.
And so then focus ends up coming into play with that as well. Like, sufficient commitment.
Okay. That reminds me, did we answer your question from before? The question was about what if I have a project I want to do that's going to take...
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, perfect.
Hey, Robert, have you heard of constructive theory?
Say it again.
Have you heard of constructor theory?
No.
You might be interested, just from the idea of the candle and the boiling. It's a thing of looking at physics in terms of what is possible and what is not possible, and the idea of it relates to entropy and stuff like that. So I think you might be interested in terms of talking about what's the most necessary to achieve a particular task, how much focus, and it might be worth having a look at anyway.
All right. Yeah. Thank you. I just found a Wikipedia page on it. I'll have a look.
I just went off on a side tangent in talking, and what you were talking about, in this theory idea of what it takes to make something happen or possible, are there like 30% focus, 60% focus amounts? I mean, to make something happen, are we talking percentages?
No, it's more about physics. It's more about looking at things through the lens of counterfactuals, what is possible and what is not possible, as opposed to looking at physics through dynamical laws that start with conditions and follow through time. It's a different lens to view physical issue problems, physics problems. But I guess it comes from information theory and quantum mechanics. So it's that sort of thing. But it's more about... the idea that, it's possible to boil water with a candle, kind of, but it's not the most efficient way to do it. You need probably a very small amount of water on top of your candle, it's not going to be, so it's about there's these things called constructors, which are, things that are able to accomplish a task. And if you can make a constructor for something, then it's possible. So like a candle is a constructor for boiling a kettle, but there are more efficient and less efficient constructors for the same task. And that's to do with thermodynamics and all these other things. Yeah. Anyway.
Okay. Thank you.
A bit tangential there. Sorry.
All right. Anything else? Anybody want to add? Ezebalahi min ashshaitani rajim, bismillah rahman rahim, alhamdulillah rabbil alameen, rahman rahim, maliki yawm al-deen, iyaka na'budu wa iyaka nasta'een, ihdina sirata mustaqim, sirata ladzina an'amta alayhim, ghayra al-maghdubi alayhim, wala ad-daleen. Ameen. Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you very
much.
Thank you,
Shaikh.
Thanks,
everybody.
Yeah.
Thanks, everyone.
Assalamu alaikum, Marids, seekers, curious, and interested listeners. We appreciate you and are happy to share our Sufi message. Your donation will help support our Sufi Center in Sydney, where we do zikr, sobat, spiritual counseling, and healing services. We believe the message should be free. but it costs equipment, rental, services, software, and hardware to get this to you. So thank you for choosing our podcast among all the millions available. If you go to our website, AnsariSufiOrder.org, you will be able to donate through PayPal whatever you think this information is worth to you. Blessings and love, the Australian Ansari Sufi Order.